May it please the court. My name is Frank Suyot, and I represent the appellant Dallery Byrd in this matter. The appellant Dallery Byrd respectfully requests that this court reverse the district court's damage award with respect to the capitation, unpaid capitation payments, and remand the case with instructions to award nominal damages on those capitation payments, and to further instruct the trial court to award the appellant $511.21, which is the sum total after you offset the $3,111.21 awarded to the appellant on his claim and the $2,600 awarded to the appellee on his claim for unpaid vacation pay. This case the standard of review is not in dispute here about whether or not the court erred in awarding the $9,110.32 for the capitation payments. The parties agree that ordinarily the findings of fact of the trial court are not to be disturbed on appeal unless they are so clearly erroneous to find no support in the record. When applied to damages, this court is charged with reviewing the record to see if there's any evidence in the record, substantial evidence in the record that supports the damage award. In this case, the record contains no support for the award, let alone substantial evidence.
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting, but my indication of the record is that the defendant was asked specifically what the total capitation figure was, and he responded $9,200 or whatever his answer was. Isn't that evidence?
Actually, Your Honor, I think the way that went is in a leading question that was provided as a foundation for the exhibit that they had prepared that they were trying to introduce, he responded in the affirmative that that was the amount. But that's an assertion.
Was there an objection to that question?
There was not a
foundational purposes.
There was not an objection to it as being leading. But to answer
your question, how do we treat that when there's a statement that there was 9,200, and they were talking about exhibits, and they referred to all the exhibits, but later with another witness, they were not asked to be introduced. But you cross-examined about evidence on the exhibits, did you not?
I was in a position, Your Honor, that I was almost forced to ask about it because the way the judge ruled is he said he was deferring until the next witness testified. So if I was going to cross-examine, I had to, that was my opportunity to do it. But again, I don't think that that is substantial evidence, a assertion that I'm entitled to $9,100 is enough. I think what you need to do is establish more. What he could have done was, he had two ways he could have established his damages. He could have gone through every patient that he claimed he was entitled to a capitation payment for and said, this is the patient, this is when they signed up, this is how many months it took for that patient to then change the primary care physician to Dr. Franzberg, and this is the amount that Chipper paid for that patient. This is how many times I saw the patient, and this is how many times Dr. Berg saw the patient. Then he could have done a calculation, and we could have gone through every patient. The record right now is we don't know if there were three patients or there were 300 patients. We don't know. No evidence was submitted. The other option was to present a summary. That's what I think all of us would have done in a trial, is present a summary. His summary didn't get admitted into evidence. It's not there. All we have is a statement saying, I'm entitled to $9,100, and there's nothing that tells us how he got to those numbers.
So he didn't provide a methodology of how he got there?
He said he provided a methodology in laying that, in attempting to lay a foundation for Exhibit L. He said, here's what I did to prepare Exhibit L. Exhibit L didn't come in. There's no evidence now. He said, yes, I took essentially the items I've just enumerated of what he needed to do, either testifying about each patient. Patient X, I saw 1, 2, 3 times. Dr. Berg saw him 2 times. Chipper pays $12.50 for this patient per month. He was on the plan for 10 months and before he switched to me, so we apply that math. He gave one example of that for one patient. He didn't do it for any other patient. So we have no information on the numbers of patients, how many months, anything. This court couldn't look at the record right now and create the same number. And in the briefing, the appellee argues that he argues that there is corroborating testimony of these calculations he did. And he cites to the testimony of Becky Vilhauer, who was the biller for both of the parties at various points in time. Ms. Vilhauer didn't mention once this methodology. She wasn't even asked about it. There's no testimony there on that.
We did Terry Thompson, I'm not sure if or Terry, I can't remember her name, that was a biller, and she brought it to the defendant's attention that your client was receiving capitation payments that he hadn't seen the patient.
There was an issue when these doctors went from being an employee-employer relationship to being office mates. They had some issues with that, and Terry Thomas or Thompson, you're going to have to forgive me, I can't remember which it is, told Mr. Franzbrook or Dr. Franzbrook that there was an issue with this. We need to try and get this sorted out. I don't think there's a dispute that there was treatment, but we don't have evidence in the record that tells us what the amount is. I mean, looking at the Supreme Court's holding in Pomeranz versus McDonald's Corporation, which was cited in the briefs, we'll insert our case name in here and say it's impossible, absent pure speculation, to ascertain from the record how appellee came up with the $9,110.32 amount he asserted he was due for unpaid capitation payments. In Pomeranz, they had essentially a similar issue where they said a dollar amount has been testified to. Somebody told us, and I think in that case it was a $6,000 number they were using for a rental of some sort, and the court said there's no basis for where that number came from. It was just pulled out of thin air. That's what Dr. Franzbrook did here when Exhibit L is not admitted. It's pulled out of thin air. We don't have any numbers that would allow the trial court to come up with this.
Mr. Suya, did Dr. Franzbrook testify that coming up with a $9,100 figure, that he had reviewed the list of all the patients and tried to make his own total of how much he was owed?
He did testify to that.
Isn't that enough to present a prima facie case about the amount of damages?
I think it probably is some evidence of it, Your Honor, but it's not substantial evidence. You have to support those numbers. I mean, if he would have just said it was $10,000, we're unable to look at the record and say, where did these numbers come from? I don't think in the appellee relies on Briano to say essentially his mere assertion of that number is sufficient. And Briano versus Rubio doesn't say that. What it held was that a mere assertion that you're not the parent of a child does not overcome evidence that establishes that you are the parent.
But if Dr. Franzberg had testified that the amount of that he was owed was $90,000 instead of $9,000, I assume you would have cross-examined him rather vigorously. Is that correct?
Your Honor, because of the position we were in and my objection to the exhibit in and of itself was that I didn't have I had not been provided the charts. I couldn't have examined any differently if he would have said it was $90,000 or if it was $9,000 because I didn't have the charts. I don't know if Dr. Franzbrook saw those patients 4 times and Dr. Berg saw that patient 2 times. I probably would have had a guess in my own mind that the amounts that we were talking about for the period of time probably couldn't have led up to that. But you asked, by asking that question, you raise a good point. This court doesn't know if, again, there were three patients or 300. If there were three patients, yeah, I think I would have been screaming bloody murder that you couldn't get to $90,000. If there's 300 patients, perhaps you can. I don't know.
Was there any testimony as to the number of patients?
There was not. There was the exhibit. I would want like to turn quickly to the cross appeal for attorney's fees and double costs under Rule 38, Appellate Rule 38. There's no dispute that this court has the authority to award attorney's fees if an appeal is frivolous. An appeal is frivolous when there's no rational argument based on the evidence or the law to support the claim or defense. In this case, I don't believe that given the fact that the one document that the appellee attempted to put into evidence to establish his damage award was excluded from evidence makes this a frivolous case. The case cited by both parties, the Mission Denver case, is very instructive in this particular situation because it too was a case in which the trial court's findings were challenged for not being supported by the record. In that case, the Court of Appeals ultimately affirmed the trial court's decision but held that the appeal was not frivolous and that it had support. And it went on to say, the standard for determining whether an appeal is frivolous should be directed towards penalizing egregious conduct without deterring a lawyer from vigorously asserting his client's rights. CAR 38 should therefore be used to impose sanctions only in clear case law cases. The one document that they admit they attempted to have admitted into evidence to support the damage award was not admitted. And this case is not frivolous based on that. And unless there are any questions, I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Suyo.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Kump, and I represent Dr. Frensbrook in this matter. This case is, the issue on appeal in this case is clearly about the sufficiency of the evidence and what standard is appropriate for this court to apply. The trial court found in this matter that on the initial claim in this case, Dr. Berg failed to prevail. He failed to prevail on any part of it. The only reason he was awarded any damages was because of an admission by the defendant. Damages as to the capitation payments were all presented under a theory of unjust enrichment, which the court properly cited Ninth District Production Credit Association in support of that. This is not a case where I guess the difficulty in this case, perhaps for the court below, was that there was no clear-cut agreement between these two parties at any point during their office sharing. So many things got muddled. But one thing that was uncontested in the evidence in the trial court was that the parties both agreed that if one party saw the other party's patient because of the other doctor being absent for some reason, they would be compensated for that time. That was simple to do when you had straight insurance, private insurance, with an explanation of benefits type paperwork that would come back, one short examination, so many dollars. This capitation program was trickier because it was in the nature of sort of a floating HMO for people on Medicaid. Clearly, the court listened to testimony of Dr. Frensbrook, who testified as to how he calculated the number he came up with, what that number was for the total of the patients that he saw that he was not compensated for under the CHIPR program, They also heard testimony from Ms. Becky Vilhauer, who was the owner of ABC Billing. And Exhibit J was admitted as a document from the plaintiff's biller, Terry Thomas. And she submitted that to the defendant saying, or to the defendant's biller saying, these are patients that weren't seen by Dr. Berg. These fees should go to your client, to your patient, to Dr. Frundsberg. That was admitted without, you know, that was admitted into evidence. In Exhibit K, was discussed both by the defendant and Ms. Vilhauer, and that was a list generated by Ms. Vilhauer, which she identified in her testimony. It was generated by her business, a list of patients about which there were issues on the capitation payments. That
it
was
showed the number of times that patient was seen, and then the doctor testified that's how he arrived at the total figure. Is that right?
There was certain information about dates of visits. And then those were confirmed by the doctor, who then went to the charts. Now, at that time, the two doctors shared a file room, presumably, since they were sharing an office, and had access to charts because they were also covering each other's patients. And for some of this time, we're speaking about the time period where the practices had separated and Dr. Frundsberg was no longer an employee. Clearly, the prior fact must be accepted on review unless the ruling is so clearly erroneous as to not find any support in the record. And that's Page v. Clark.
Mr. Compa, if I could back you up for a second, you were talking about Exhibit K.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, Mr. Suyot said that exhibit was not admitted into evidence.
I don't know if Mr. Suyot addressed that, and I'm not clear in my mind whether that was ever ultimately admitted by the court. But it was something that was substantiated by the testimony of Ms. Vilhauer, and I think I'll address that in a second, along with the Exhibit L, which was not admitted. The defendant went through these documents and went through the process of how he was notified initially, the report he got from his biller, and then he went to the charts and examined the dates of service and who provided the service, whether it was either himself exclusively or Dr. Berg exclusively or some combination. And then he recited his calculus of how he did that for a couple of patients, one under direct examination by myself, another time on cross-examination with Mr. Suya. And whether the court explicitly adopted his method of calculation or not, the lack of that explicit statement on the record by the trial court that Dr. Frundsberg's method was adequate doesn't mean that it wasn't implicitly adopted by the court, and I think that's contained in the court's findings. And that I'm referring there to Par B Triple L and J at page 1107. It doesn't mean it was an inadequate method just because the court didn't explicitly adopt it. The plaintiff in this case had ample notice of these chipper payments and that they were going to be an issue. It was raised in the initial answer with setoffs concerning those. It was raised in initial disclosures. There were charts given to the other side in the initial disclosures because we were under a special rule 1.1 where we had to disclose in detail the testimony of all our witnesses. And At the very latest, 2.5 years before the first day of trial, the plaintiff knew this was an issue, and they failed to present one witness to address this issue. Dr. Berg didn't testify. His biller, Terry Thomas, didn't appear. No one testified to present any contradictory evidence as to either the number of patients, the method of calculation, or the amount owed.
Counsel, your counterpart said that you could look at the record and not be able to create the same number. Do you agree with that? L was not allowed in.
I think the issue with L is that I think the court implicitly adopted it and used it in its findings. It never specifically ruled. It had a deferred ruling on whether it was going to admit that exhibit. I failed to remind the court, and I don't recall the court ever ruling that it was admitted or not. So, you know, but I, my argument is that it was implicitly included in the calculus the court used.
So set aside the implicit argument.
Okay.
And assume for the purposes of this question that we don't agree with you on that, for instance. Would you be able to look at the record and create the same number without that exhibit?
My client could. I couldn't do it. And without that exhibit, I don't think we could, because that was a listing where we provided specific numbers of dates of service, etc. So I think the court had to take that into account.
Okay, thank you.
I think the plaintiff may have invited error by not providing any evidence or testimony, or any rebuttal testimony. I believe that the defendant presented sufficient evidence for the trial court to make the finding that it did, and that the I guess for this segment, I'm going to end with the thought that I think that the defendant's award should be upheld as provided by the amended order of the trial court. And the alternative, I think the appropriate remedy here is not to reduce that award, but to remand it for further findings on the record in front of the trial judge, and have him rule on the base, or, you know, make a ruling on Exhibit L, since it was never ruled on, or make an alternate or additional findings as to how he came up with that. So I think the record is somewhat silent in that regard. Finally, with respect to the argument for attorney's fees, I think that the plaintiff has been frivolous in this appeal, not because they thought that the number was wrong. They brought this appeal because it was something to, you know, further litigate. There was substantial evidence on this issue in the record from both the defendant, biller, and some of the exhibits that were admitted. And therefore, that's why I asked for the attorney's fees and costs. And I would entertain any questions.
I don't think we have any questions at this time. Thank you, Mr. Kump.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Judge Schraubaum, I want to address your questions concerning Exhibit K. Exhibit K was not admitted into evidence. It was prepared, the testimony by Dr. Franzbrook, when he talked about it, was that it had been prepared by Ms. Vilhauer at his request, and they offered it at the same time they moved to offer Exhibit L. It was objected to. And Judge Popovich said he was not going to admit it until he heard testimony from the person who prepared it. So it wasn't admitted into evidence. Counsel stated during his argument that he believes that the trial court implicitly used Exhibit L. I don't believe it's proper for a trial court to use an exhibit that's not admitted into evidence as evidence to support its damage award under any circumstances. If it's not admitted into evidence, you can't use it. If this were a jury, what would have happened is we would have handed the jurors their exhibit book, and Exhibit L would have been pulled out of there. They could have never looked at it. If the argument is that it was appropriate to implicitly use that document that wasn't admitted into evidence, I don't believe the law of Colorado would allow that. I want to address the issue of remanding it with instructions to explain with some sort of explanation of how they arrived at, or how the trial court arrived at its number. And it sounds like what the defendant is asking for now is a second bite at the apple to introduce its evidence. This case was supposed to be tried in one day and took 3 days to try over a significant amount of period of time. And there should be no second bites at the apple at this time. Finally, with respect to the frivolousness, I don't think this case can be, this appeal can be considered frivolous in any shape or form, given, again, that Exhibit L wasn't admitted. And unless there's any questions, my time has expired.
Thank you, Mr. Suya. Thank you again, Mr. Kump. We appreciate both of your arguments this morning. That concludes the arguments for Division 1 this morning. This case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. The court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.